The Loose Cannons Podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Méthode profil. N'en souris pas. Sois triste. Plus triste. Pense à quelque chose de terrible, hein? Voilà. Là, triste. Voilà, là, ça vient. Ouais, ouais, là, là!
Hey, everyone. It's another Loose Cannons mini-sode coming at ya. Today, we're going to be discussing 1994's Red, directed by Krzysztof Kieślowski, and joining me, Ruben, is Basil, and that's it.
Yeah, mini ep.
Yep.
Or
we had some
non-new release mini ep.
Yeah, we had some trouble scheduling a third person. So Basil and I decided, since we were both pretty available, to just do a mini episode for this week, so that we still had something coming out. Mm-hmm. And if you've listened to our mini eps before, you know that we don't do heralds and announcements, so I'll just go ahead and give the plot to Red, and we'll jump right into discussion, which is, it's a movie about a student and part-time model named Valentine, who one night when she is driving, I believe home from a runway show, but she's just driving, she gets distracted and accidentally runs over a dog, but the dog is okay, and when she tries to take the dog back to the owner, he doesn't want the dog. And she ends up sort of forming a strange relationship, friendship with this kind of miserable man. And the movie is mostly about how their relationship develops over the course of the film. And then there's kind of a B-plot involving another judge. That man is a retired judge, and there's another man who lives in the same building as her, who has just passed his, I guess, like, judge exams, and is going to be a judge, and he is one of the people that the retired judge has been listening in on, and he finds out that his girlfriend is cheating on him. And basically the major plot points of this film. It's not a very plotty film. A lot of discussions.
It's true.
What did you think of this movie, Basil?
I did not like it. Yeah. It reminded me of Amelie. I feel like Amelie had to have been pretty influenced by this movie.
For sure.
But I actually think that I like Amelie a little better than this movie, because that movie at least is like pretty audacious about its like fanciful coincidences and kind of silly about it. And this movie is like kind of glum in spite of its kind of ridiculous plot, which feels a little incongruous to me, where, like, you know, it seems to be treating its kind of ideas about, like, fate and destiny and the scales of justice, like, somewhat seriously, but I find the idea of, like, cosmic coincidences and that having any, like, serious meaning to people a little silly now. Like, it's hard
for me. Iron Jacobs has a very sad face for most of the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like she looks okay at the beginning of the movie, and then that guy yells at her to be sad, and then she's sad for the rest of the film.
It's true. What about you?
I like this movie a lot.
Oh, boy.
I think how you feel is exactly how I felt when I watched Kieślowski when I was younger, which is part of the reason why I wanted to... we chose a Kieślowski movie is because he's like a very famous director whose work I haven't explored, because when I was younger, I watched some of his films and found them like pretty pretentious. And I didn't find it unpretentious this time. I just found myself not really caring if the major thrust of the film is like this kind of Magnolia-esque interconnection of lives and like discussion of ethics and how ethics, if you trace it down to its core, is like still self-interested because it's like about protecting your own feelings and stuff like that. That all of that stuff isn't good in my opinion, but I also didn't care. That I just enjoyed. Hello, cat. I just enjoyed the feeling of the movie. Like the opening shots are like these undercranked. Is it undercranked when it goes really fast? Right.
Yeah.
Undercranked shots, like following phone lines out into the sea and then back in. And I was like, I wish more movies started this way with like not a plot thing where like you have no idea what this has to do with the film. It's just like, this is the mood of the film. It's like really fast shots following these weird things that you don't know what they are yet, just out into the sea. And I was like, I like that a lot. And I like the title. Most titles are like very bland or like kind of artsily poetic without necessarily adding anything to the film. But it's a movie that feels very red. It's like, he's like, I wanted to make a movie about each of the three colors in the flag, and this is the red one. And it's like, it's a red movie in its look, but it also, I was like, I get why you call this red. This movie's very red. It's about red stuff.
Yep.
That's how I feel when I feel red. And I was like, I like that. But,
nice.
Yeah. I find the themes to be like a little silly and overwrought, and it didn't really bother me as much as I would expect. I also think it's a very pretty film.
Yeah, I think I like some of the lighting kind of a lot, but I did find the color scheme very on the nose. It's like
it gets almost more red towards the end of the film, and it gets a little ridiculous by then. I definitely like the first act more than I like the final act by a fairly significant margin.
Yeah, I noticed that too, that it's like there's a little bit of red here and there, and then it's like every single room has something red in it.
Yeah.
And then by the end, they're like in big red rooms, like that big runway thing where they're sitting. And then he's got a red Jeep, wears a red sweater.
Yeah. Red bowling ball.
Very red bowling
ball. One of the coolest shots in the film, following that bowling ball down the lane.
You like that shot, but not the one in the Big Lebowski that's the same shot?
I probably like that shot in the Big Lebowski too.
Nice. I like bowling. I like stuff in bowling. Yeah, I was a little curious how, I mean, there's like an implication sort of that this judge she's talking to is like the same judge as the younger one.
Yeah, that they're living the same life.
Yeah.
And that the dream that he had is, you know, just his life. The dream that he had about her being happy in 50 years with the man.
Yeah, but him this time.
Yeah.
Because he was like, oh, you shouldn't fly. You should take the ferry. And then a bunch of people almost die, except for young him and her. So now they're going to get together. And I was like, that seems a little gross. You know all those people are going to die. How'd you know she's going to survive? You're taking a big risk, sir.
Yeah, that part, it makes me really uncomfortable and seems uncommented on. I still feel that way, I guess, about movies. It's just like a lot of, extraneous people will die in plots, just completely unrecognizing the tragedy. I mean, because it's my favorite example, because you put it so clearly, I'll just keep going back to it over and over again. In the Grand Budapest Hotel, when they open a box and they're like, oh, thank God, it's not the character. It's just some other random woman who was decapitated.
few.
We feel so good about this now.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And it also, it almost seems like played as a joke because all the other people, the survivors are all...
Yeah, the stars like of the other films.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, this is... Like, ah, what a funny coincidence. Only seven people survived, and they're the seven characters we really know from watching these three movies. It's
yeah. Brutal. I'm not going to defend the plot or the themes because I agree with you. They're not sure. Great.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they didn't like, I just pushed them out of the way.
Yeah.
It's like, I like the way this movie makes me feel.
Talk more about that, because I feel like otherwise we're just going to be going back and forth, because the only things that bothered me were the whole reason that I don't like this movie is for the reasons that you don't care about. So.
Yeah. I think the blocking is really good, which it seems like with each passing film that I watch, I realize is more and more important to me, in terms of whether or not I enjoy a film, that there's something about the way in which people are staged with a camera that very typically is like, most are either like a theatrical staging, like here's the camera setup, and we figure out where the people move in the room, and it all makes sense, but the camera isn't thought of as like a third party.
Right.
And you're not thinking about how their movement is interacting with the camera's movement or lack thereof. And then the other one is like, they don't even really know how to stage a scene.
Right.
And they're just like, we'll get a lot of coverage and try to cut it together in editing to make it look like something happened here. And
right.
This movie is staged very intricately and very well. And just like when people move or the camera moves, it's always, you could take each individual frame and be like, yeah, I see why it's set up in this section. Here they're framed by two windows and separated by a bookcase, you know, things like that. Here, like, she turns her back to the audience when she's turning her back to her possessive boyfriend. She doesn't,
right.
You know, want anything to do with that guy for the moment. And I was like, I really like blocking. It's just something that, you know, I think it would be totally fair to be like, Kieslowski is like an aesthete, but not a thinker.
Sorry.
He can be my Wong Kar Wai.
Yeah.
Possibly, based on one film.
Love him in spite of his pretensions. But yeah, I like that too. I also like, even though on paper I was very, very against it, I like the way that it looks when he's climbing up the apartment building to spy on his girlfriend. But then like it kind of ruined it for me because then he's watching them have sex and he has this devastated look on his face and I was like, you're a creep right now. I'm not going to feel sorry for you.
That it's a strange film in terms of its portrayal of, I guess, feminism, because it's for sure not a feminist film. Like that scene that I just kind of referenced, she's going to take a shower and she just opens her shirt up and shows off her bra, and it's like a very sexualized image that exists for no reason in this film whatsoever. But it's kind of like Kieslowski seems to understand at least human dynamics enough that, like, just in presenting the reality of the situation, he sometimes gets it how men treat women, even if he's like not a particularly great critiquer, like the way that the photographer looks at Valentine, and then when he tries to like bully her into dating him, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty familiar.
Right.
But also it doesn't land with the punch that it could have if he was like really invested in the idea of like how all of the men in her life are kind of bullying her. Even this judge that she forms a friendship with is like one of those like philosophy bros or something, where he's like, she just wants to be a nice person, and he's like trying to capture her in like logic faults. And it's like, who cares? Yeah. She just wants to be nice.
Yeah, and yeah, I think that I did have like sort of problems with their friendship in that regard, because he is just like, he's like bullying her and then like manipulating her into coming back. Like, he says he doesn't want the dog, but then he sends the money hoping that she's going to come back again. And like, that's like sort of commented on, but like it ends up being like, well, it was okay in the end because, you know, they both learned something and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's like, I don't know. He's a real garbage person.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, there's no sort of worse way to use your, like, sadness and guilt than to, like, push it onto someone else and try to force the decision onto them. And he does that a lot in this movie, where he's like, I'm miserable, I don't have anyone, and I don't have anything in my life that I want. And she's like, okay, so kill yourself. And he's like, maybe I will. And she's like, oh, don't kill yourself. And I'm like, nah, you should have stuck to your guns. And they're like, yeah.
Yep. Do it. I also wondered whether or not the movie, this is just a total digression, but whether the movie Frequency was inspired by this, because it also involves listening in on the, although it's a radio in that, but it's still time travel-esque and also listening.
Yeah, I mean, I, the differences between the story of the woman who broke his heart and the woman that is dating the current young judge or whatever are different enough that it seems like the implication is that they're not the same, but that there's some sort of, I don't know, karmic cycle going on. And he's, like, hoping that she can break it so that, like, the next version of him that comes along doesn't have to live such a miserable life.
Sure.
But
I didn't even notice that there were differences in the story, but because there are a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
Yachts and sailing and such.
Yeah. And opening a book to the right, to the exact right question. It's funny to me when the judge makes a good point accidentally. Like, the first time that she asks him, like, you know, like, why are you like this? Were you hurt by someone? And he kind of, defers the question and starts talking about his first quick case, and he acquitted someone who was guilty, but then the person lived a good life after he acquitted him. And he's like, she's like, well, so then you did a good thing. And he's like, how many more people could have I acquitted? And it seems like he's saying, like, oh, like, slippery slope argument. Maybe I should just acquit everybody. I want to be like, yeah, maybe you should just acquit everybody.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how to read when he said that, because I thought maybe he was actually saying that, like, not in a slippery slope argument, but like, oh, like, I could have done more. Maybe I could have saved more people and didn't.
Yeah, it's confusing because he brings it up as, like, something that he feels bad about, but then sort of ends by saying, like, why do I feel bad about this?
Yeah, I was wondering if the implication was supposed to be that he feels bad that he didn't do that more, but I don't know, you know, like... because then he also has the story later about how he semi-revenge convicted a different guy.
His rival lover.
Yeah. But then it's weird because he says he says that it was perfectly legal sentence or whatever. But he seems to feel bad about it anyway. Like, he's like, this guy was guilty and I convicted him, but I was also a partial judge.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, I think this is a continuation of kind of what I was saying before, is that I think Kieslowski, for whatever reason, is, like, actually pretty good at, like, capturing humans and being like, this is how men think and act, but not going, like, the next step and being like, it's kind of bad that men think and act this way. Like, he's not, right. You know, like, putting a needle on it, which is, so, like, that's, like, a very common behavior I find in myself and in other men of being like, I knew something was wrong, and then I did it the wrong thing anyway, and then I felt guilty about it, and that's the end of the story.
Right.
It's like, wait, what? Why did you do it if you knew it was wrong? And then why didn't you make reparations if you felt guilty about it?
Nope. He just stopped being a judge.
It was fascinating, wasn't it? It's disgusting. It's illegal, too.
Yeah.
Gotta say, I disagree with him when he says that judges are worse than cops, though.
Mm-hmm. I agree. They aren't, but they're also bad.
Yeah. I mean, they're part of the, you know, bad carceral system, so it's all turtles all the way down, but cops are the gas in the engine that get it started, so they're the worst.
Need them. What was I gonna say? I guess he is pretty interested in the Bible. And
I missed that part, I guess. I mean,
well, there's just like parts of like what he's like with the destiny and everything like that. I mean, I guess it's like kind of mythological too, but it seems like kind of a I don't know. Lots of the morality of some of the movie seems kind of rooted in the like
Christian
thing, which
is fair. Yeah, I mean, I always have heard that people consider him kind of like Tarkovsky-esque of interrogating, like, can Christianity really be real if we live in a world that's like this?
Right.
But it would make more sense for him to be more invested in it than Tarkovsky. Tarkovsky's films feel very atheist to me, and obviously this has a lot of, you know, what I called Magnolia-isms, but it predates Magnolia, of course.
Sure. Yeah. There's also the very literalization of the, like, glass houses platitude, where all the people that he's spying on that are all terrible people are literally throwing stones through his windows.
I love that shot, though, when she, like, is cleaning it up, and she picks up the stone and puts it on the table with all the other stones.
Yeah. It's collecting them. There's a... the radio thing at the beginning, I was also going to bring this up, I'm jumping around kind of, but it seems like that another kind of obvious, like, fate intervening, because she gets distracted by the radio making, like, a weird...
alien noises.
Noise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then runs over his dog.
Yeah. I guess I didn't think about it that way at the time, because the film's themes and plot hadn't established themselves, and so I was just like, whoa, weird alien noises, I like that.
Right.
That adds to the weird mood of this movie so far.
Yeah, I think I had remembered that there was, like, some kind of sci-fi feeling element to the plot, but I didn't remember exactly what it was, because it had been so long since I saw this. But, I mean, it's not really sci-fi, but, you know, esque. I also kind of, didn't feel like I could get on board for her falling for this stranger that she doesn't meet until the movie's over, basically, when he gets really mad about his girlfriend cheating on him, and then he hits his dog.
Yeah, he takes it out on his dog.
And then briefly abandons the dog before feeling sad and changing his mind.
Yep.
It's like, I don't like this guy at all.
No, he's terrible. He doesn't even seem like a step up from her current terrible boyfriend.
That's true. Yeah, at least that guy's not climbing up to her window.
Yeah, at least that guy's in London, so she doesn't really, she only has to deal with him on the phone, his weird possessive energy.
But not that guy.
No, I mean, that's probably another, like, you know, sort of accurately unobserved, or observed but uncritiqued male thing of being like, I was a really bad person, but if I met the right woman, she could therapize me into being good. She could sacrifice all of her emotional labor, and then I would be okay again. So essentially, it's your fault if I'm terrible, woman.
Yeah. I just need to meet the right person. I keep meeting all these bad people that make me do bad things. Yeah. I want to meet the right person that makes me do good things.
For free, because I could just sign up for therapy or something and pay to work out my issues, but I'd rather it be free and with sex involved.
Mm-hmm. And to happen without me doing very much work, because this person's just going to cure me.
Yeah.
Therapy. I have to do it myself.
Yes.
More or less. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, it's speaking along the same lines, which is why I had mentioned beforehand that I didn't really want to do White, is that the kind of plot of that movie is that another thing of, like, a man getting cheated on and him being emasculated by her, and it not feeling like it ever critiques that. It's just like, she takes a lot of delight in rubbing it in his face, and he's really broken up about that. I'm like, it's really one-sided depiction. Very good. Maybe he deserves to have it rubbed in his face.
Yeah, I have no context for
sure.
My enjoyment of this film, which is all in little moments, you know? She's doing a runway show, and she kind of, like, stumbles a little. And then when she walks off stage, she's like, whoa, I almost fell down. And I was like, I like that.
Yeah. I like the guy who comes up and, like, smiles really big at her right after she says that.
He's like,
great job. He's very excited for her.
And I like the way this movie sounds. It's a part where I didn't even understand what the context was for the rest of the film. Where she, I don't know, wins like a lottery or something. I don't know, it's just all these coins are falling down. And I was like, coin sounds.
Oh, yeah. I think the, she goes to that bar like multiple times in the movie. And I think this is the other thing that early on reminded me of Amelie, is that every time you pull the thing, like, you're hoping not to win. It's like an ante. Yeah. So, like, if you win, that means you're going to have a bad day because you used up all your good luck for the day winning that thing at the beginning of the day. So, there's, like, a thing pretty late in the movie with, I think it's right around the time when the guy discovers he's being cheated on. There's, like, a shot of his car, and then, like, it goes through the bar, and the jackpot thing is, like, three cherries. So, He's got a real bad day in store for him because somebody hit the jackpot.
Makes sense.
Cutesy.
Also, with the blocking, I would say that there's an understanding of, like, performativeness in this movie, which I like. The idea that, like, people act differently when they're private as in when they're public, and, like, one of my favorite moments in the film is when the young judge comes out from his testing or whatever, and his girlfriend is waiting there for him, and he's like, I passed, and she's like, oh, that's great, and all because you dropped that book that one time. And then there's, like, a long pause, and they, like, are just, like, staring at each other, and he just throws his books into the air to, like, repeat the thing that he did accidentally before, but, like,
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't seem like smooth or writerly at all. It's just like, oh, I guess I'm doing this now. I'm throwing my books in the air. And I think it happens a lot with Valentine and the older judge as well, where like he'll say something and she'll kind of like slump to the floor and like look off into the distant, like very sadly. She's like, he said something sad. Time to do the sad motion now. Where I can't stand up any longer, and I'm looking wistfully off into the distance. And I was like, yeah, that's human behavior, and it's, you know, a credit to the director and the actors that they're able to have the performance happen within the character, that it doesn't feel like an actress performing. It feels like a human being acting how they think actors act. Like, this is what people do in this moment. So,
yeah.
A little bit of a very small amount of certified copy-esque stuff going on there.
Yeah, and I think that the photographer scene that quote at the beginning was kind of a like precursor, like a nod to that or whatever, when she is smiling and he's like, no, look sadder, and she looks sadder immediately. It's like, yeah. that's what you do, you know. Feel very sad. That's almost all my notes. I wrote that her landlord's racist.
Oh, yeah.
That's like a small thing that comes up in this.
Maybe that is the key to the film, is that she notices his racism because she's like, well, I don't know who did this. Right. Like, to try to like stumble over it because, you know, he's helping her. And she doesn't want to like piss off her landlord, since, you know, it's a horrible position to be in. And maybe that's the way the film is hinting at its own commentary. It's just like, well, this is how men act. So, come to your own conclusions, question mark? If she's like our moral gateway into the film.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that was something that, you know, in a film that's fairly free of that type of critique along those kind of social lines, that was a moment that did actually feel pointed in a way, where I don't know if it was exactly saying like she's bad for not calling him out, but it certainly didn't feel like it thought that like it was okay for that guy to just assume that Turkish people
are
awful. So yeah
stuck out though. It's kind of cool. And I do also like that, I mean, I keep saying time travel in sci-fi, but also the movie's kind of like a ghost story, like Ugetsu or whatever.
Yeah.
Old man's kind of a ghost haunting his house.
Like personal shopper, but not scary. Mm-hmm.
Right. But.
Yeah, there's definitely like, you know, the dog can be seen as like a Chiron figure or whatever it's called, like a fairy between worlds, because there's that part. And by the way, people listening to this podcast, you should leash your dogs. The dog has already once been hit by a car because it was off its leash. And then she's like, takes it to a park and she's like, oh, you know what would be nice? Just let it off the leash, and it just runs away. Yeah. And it goes into a church first. And then it runs out of the church, and it goes to his house, and they're, like, standing outside the house, or she's standing outside the house for, like, a long time before the guy and the dog come back out, and it doesn't seem like the house is inhabited. And we didn't see it from the outside earlier. We just, when she first goes to see the man, it just starts inside. And so we were, right. You're like, what is this place that the dog has run to? And mm-hmm. and then again, when he's like, oh, I'll get you 30 more francs. And she's like, okay. And she stands outside again for like a really long time. And it's like, what is happening?
She finally goes in.
Ghastly. Ghost-like. Good point about ghosts.
Yeah. But yeah. I agree. I was like, this is an extremely bad decision. This.
Yeah. I mean, you should always leash your dog, but, you know, if you've already had experiences of your dog running away, definitely keep them on the leash. But
yeah, Portland's pretty good. There's a lot of fenced dog parks, but it always frustrates me when I see people, like, near those dog parks, but not in them, with their dog running around. I was like, there's a whole special spot in this park just for you. Why you gotta be weird?
Yeah, I mean, it's for their protection, but they're like, oh, the dog loves being off the leash. And I was like, yeah, but the reason the dog loves being off the leash is because it's still an animal.
Yeah.
And it's gonna react like an animal would. Like, you can, you know, I get spent every hour of every day training a puppy for like 5 years, and it could see like a hawk or something, and instinct's gonna kick in.
Yeah.
And it's gonna do something that it shouldn't, like run away or run towards a hawk.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I may have told the story before on the podcast, but someone I was dating briefly was out walking her dog, and someone had their huge German Shepherd off the leash. And it just tried to attack her dog. Like, I'm sure it was, like, probably a well-trained dog, or he thought so, because I would hope that a person who has a dog that's known to attack other dogs wouldn't ever have it off a leash. But he had the leash, and then the dog tried to attack her dog. And I was like, whoa, what the hell? Because it's, like, her dog is tiny,
yeah.
And a German Shepherd's a huge. So it's, like, 5 times bigger. Could have been really bad if we hadn't intervened.
Yep. People treat their dogs like toddlers, and they're not. They gotta be treated like dogs. And that's not, you know, it's not bad to treat a dog like a dog. You're doing it in a way that's respectful to what it actually is.
Not bears this time, but off topic with dogs. Pretty good.
It's a good dog movie, though. There's a lot of dog content in this movie. I like a movie that centers its, like, morality around dogs. Like, that guy's bad because he doesn't care about his dog, and she's good because she goes in the middle of the night to take a random dog to a vet, even after the guy says he doesn't want her. And then, like, the other guy, you know, hits his dog, and that's supposed to be, like, a moment where we really don't like him. And at the end, you get, like, a literal rebirth, you know, tying into the whole time travel ghost story thing. It's like, Rita's had puppies, so yeah, I remember the name of the dog, but not the names of any of the characters. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna give, you know, a puppy to Valentine. So the whole dog cycle can start again.
And doesn't he have, in the final part, isn't he carrying his dog or something like that? No, I forget. There's one point where it looks like he's abandoned his, the young guy.
I don't know. That's not what when I finish watching the film, I will read the Wikipedia description just to make sure that I got everything. And that is not what the Wikipedia description said. But maybe you watched it more closely than the person who wrote the plot for Wikipedia.
Yeah, I don't remember where, but there is a part where he goes back. He clearly has the dog again, but I can't remember now whether it was like...
Oh, he's taking the dog onto the boat, but I don't think he comes off the rescue boat with the dog, implying that dog died.
Sad.
Yeah. 1994 was also the year of the dead dog, just like 2015.
Yep. Rough.
Woof.
That's about it for my notes. I feel like I hit on a lot of the stuff.
I think we covered it pretty well.
Yeah. Way to go.
Themes, kind of silly. Mm-hmm. Patriarchy, very lightly commented on, just like a quick drive-by. Racism more pointedly, but even faster commented on. Like a stronger flavor, but even less amount of the runtime. And pretty good looking film. Yeah. Looks nice. Too much red. At the end. Uh-huh. Like blue is the warmest color. And the movie starts off with like, just like she has blue hair, that one character. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the film, like the entire film is blue except for her hair.
Oh boy. Very cute.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. The plan is we're supposed to do Return to AFI next week. So bridge over the River Kwai.
Bridge on.
Bridge on the River Kwai. Is what you should watch.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Hope you're enjoying the podcast. If so, please subscribe using your podcast listening application. Give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes. Check out all of our content on loosecannons.net and give us your money on patreon.com/loosecannons. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.